Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Decent Christian Talk, episode number 60. What's up, guys? I'm Gabe Jones. This is a podcast by the fans, for the fans. And like all of you, of course, I am a fan. And today we're going to be talking about one of the biggest, most influential persons in Christian music history, Larry Norman. Some would consider him the father of Christian rock and roll. That I'll let you guys be the judge of that. But he's definitely in the conversation, and we're so excited to be talking to Gregory Thornberry today later on the show. He wrote a biography on him, on Larry Norman, that just released last week. It's called Why Should the Devil Have All the Good Music? It's a story of Larry Norman and the perils of Christian rock. Man, I can't begin to describe to you guys how good this biography is. We were so excited to get our hands on this. And we're not the only ones that thought this was a great book. This was on the Amazon.com bestseller list last week, and it's well-deserved because this book is just absolutely dripping with so many great stories and so many great experiences that Larry Norman had throughout his life. Not all of them were happy experiences, but they were ones that influenced him as a person and as a songwriter. You know, for me, personally, as a fan, I didn't really get to experience the prime of Larry Norman because of my age. A lot of the older generations, you know, kind of sitting down with them, you know, including my parents, we got to hear, people like me, we got to hear, you know, stories of Larry Norman and kind of hearing the firsthand knowledge of what it was like to be a fan during that time. My experience is not completely void of Larry Norman concerts, because I got to attend one or two on the later end of his career. And man, I cannot begin to describe to you the stage presence that man had, just walking out on stage with a guitar. And there's only one other guy, Rich Mullins, that I think even came close to kind of the electricity that came through the PA system when they were on stage, most of the time by themselves. And I think a lot of the reason because of that was those guys shot from the hip. You know, they spoke the truth that they knew, and they weren't sugarcoating it either. And this book talks about a lot of Larry Norman's experiences with telling the truth and a lot of the backlash that came from that, from the music industry, from fans, from the evangelists that were on TV at the time. And we get into that with our interview today, but you know, we've talked a lot about Christian hip-hop on this show. And, you know, honestly, what's been going on with that genre the last couple of years kind of reminds me what Larry Norman went through in the 70s and the 80s, where people speak up about issues that are going on around us, especially racism, and, you know, a lot of people's reaction to that within the church has been, why don't you just shut up and make music? And we talk about this kind of in the interview, but Larry Norman felt that Christian music was pretty much just propaganda, and I know that there's a lot of bad connotations with that word, but what he meant by that was kind of music that just tickled your ears, music that didn't necessarily challenge the way that you thought. And anytime anybody would bring up kind of the injustices within the church and within the world and within the society at the time, kind of the reaction was, you know, why don't you just shut up and play music? But people don't understand that music, one of the vehicles of preaching against injustices is music. And music is an amazing tool for that. And that's a tool that Larry Norman used over the years. And it's a tool that Rich Mullins used over the years. But I think Larry Norman, more so than Rich Mullins, spoke about these injustices in his music. And he lived that in his life as well. And it's very inspiring to know that a lot of the artists that we listen to today were inspired by Larry Norman. We've gotten to talk with a lot of artists on this show over the years, both on the record and off the record, just kind of how they were influenced by Larry Norman. And, you know, just getting to hear how they influenced them as a songwriter and also as a person. It's really cool to hear. And it kind of solidifies the fact that Larry Norman is in the conversation to be the father of Christian rock and roll. Really getting to know a lot of these artists, and like kind of like I talked about before, hearing these stories from the older generations, it's so awesome to know that legacy still lives on. You know, within the Christian music world, sometimes you do have to dig a little bit, but it is out there. It is out there, and this show tries to promote those types of artists that do encourage you to think about things and kind of parse out some of the injustices that are going on. And so that's why Larry Norman is near and dear to our hearts on this show, and that's why we were so excited to talk with Gregory Thornberry about this. And, you know, Dr. Thornberry is probably the smartest person that's ever been on the show. So that's an accomplishment in and of itself. And we were so excited to talk with him about this book. Guys, you need to go check out this book. That's probably not the last time I'll say this on this show. It's called Why Should the Devil Have All the Good Music? It's a story of Larry Norman and the perils of Christian rock. Guys, it was on the Amazon.com bestseller list last week. People are loving this book. It's definitely worth checking out. You can get it on hard copy. You can get it as an ebook if that's your thing. Check it out wherever you get your books. I know it's on Amazon, but it's other places too. Before we head into our interview, we need to talk about our Patreon page, patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. Unfortunately, you know, Christian music, you know, that it has a business side of it. People that make music need to make money. This podcast, I'm not into making money, but this podcast does cost money, and unfortunately, we do need some help with sponsoring it. And a lot of you have helped out, and we really appreciate it. But for those of you that would also like to join our team, you can go check that out at patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. For as low as $1 a month, you can join our team and really help continue to keep this show running. If you would rather do a one-time donation, you can go to our website, decentchristiantalk.com. There's a donate button on the right-hand side of the page if you go to the website on your desktop or your laptop. Again, guys, we really appreciate those of you that have supported us over the years, and we value your continued support in keeping this show running. Guys, we are so excited to talk with Dr. Thornberry today. He did such a great job putting this book together. He poured his heart out in this book, just kind of diving into the Norman family archives, and it's just a well-done job. It's very thorough, and it's a very telling, revealing story. But without further ado, here's our interview with Dr. Gregory Thornberry.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
I want the people to know that he saved my soul, but I still like to listen to the radio. They say rock and roll is wrong, we'll give you one more chance. I say I feel so good, I gotta get up and dance. I know what's right, I know what's wrong. I don't confuse it. All I'm really trying to say is why should the devil have all the good music? And I feel good every day.
So, yeah, kind of getting into this, I got to read your book this week, and it was so much fun to read.
Thank you.
You know, I'm full disclosure, I'm 32 years old, so I kind of missed out on a lot of, you know, that the kind of peak of Larry Norman, and I've gotten to hear a lot of those stories from my elders. My father was really liked him. But I just kind of wonder why you decided to do this. Why Larry Norman? What was it? What led to that?
Well, the reason for Larry Norman is that he unintentionally created an entire genre of music. He was a pioneer, burst upon the music scene in the Bay Area, something that was unique at the time. On the one hand, there was popular rock and roll music industry that thought he had incredible talent, and the proof of that is that he got signed to several major record label deals in a row. Even if the story is apocryphal, I think it probably happened, but a lot of people have said this, that, you know, Paul McCartney was in the elevator with Larry Norman. I know that he said, "I'm a big fan of your music." But he may also have said, you know, "You'd be a big star if you just shut up about religion." He perplexed the people in the secular music industry. And on the other hand, we forget at 32 years old, you may not remember a time when you told their church to bring their Beatles and Led Zeppelin and Queen records to church and you would have bonfires. And, you know, that wasn't just in the, you know, 50s, 60s, and 70s. That was happening all the way up through the 80s. And there were a lot of conservative, fundamentalist church leaders that thought rock and roll was of the devil. And as David Noble, who went on to found Summit Ministries, once wrote in a book, Christian rock was a stratagem of Mephistopheles, you know, the devil. So, you know, Larry was doing something incredibly uncomfortable for him, but he felt compelled to do it. And anyone who's a pioneer and a trailblazer like that needs to have their story told, even if the sum total of the story is something that winds up prompting more introspection and conversations among ourselves rather than just about him.
You'd mentioned kind of some of the backlash of people in the church. I think you talked about it in your book. Someone actually called his music the new pornography. How did that kind of that treatment that he got, along with a lot of other relationships like the one with his father, how did that affect him mentally and as a songwriter?
Well, I think that every artist does their best work when they are. It's one of the things that makes art special is that it is this argument, this dialogue, this conversation with what is happening in culture. People understood that their parents didn't like what was happening in the 60s. They weren't happy that Elvis and the Beatles came along and really changed, you know, turned over the tables of the whole cultural conversation. And just remember the reaction to John Lennon when John Lennon said, you know, sort of sadly, wistfully, that the Beatles are bigger than Jesus right now. And everybody freaked out. But the truth of the matter was that the Beatles probably at that time did mean more to the average kid in Britain and America than Jesus did. And so Larry saw this problem happening, which was that rhythm and blues, which gave us rock and roll, came from black gospel churches in the South. And he didn't understand why there was this separation, this forced separation of music that came from a central part of the church's legacy in America, how that all of a sudden got consigned over to Satan himself. And it's a great example of somebody willing to take upon themselves a conversation that no one else at that time really was willing to have in quite the same way.
He also kind of had his own thoughts on Christian music. He talked about a lot of, he challenged the way that people thought, and he kind of thought that a lot of the stuff that was going on in that time in the Christian music industry was more propaganda. How do you think people perceived him inside the Christian music industry compared to those that were like pastors and such?
Well, the people inside the Christian music industry weren't really happy with him either, because he was criticizing the quality of their work. He was saying, you're putting out really cheesy, cheap-sounding records. You're not investing in it. At one point in the book, I cite him writing a letter to the record executive at Word Records when ABC had taken over Word, and there was this possibility of a licensing deal with this new record label Larry was going to start, Solid Rock Records. He said, one Andre Crouch recording a great record is better than 15 of the groups that you get in and record for $5,000, and it sounds terrible and there's no artistic value to it. So, he was really challenging that whole scene. And when Christian contemporary music really was starting to flourish and bloom and come along, when someone like John Still, who is the founder of CCM magazine, asked Larry what he thought about having a Rolling Stone magazine for Christian rock, I think Larry said something like, a top 10 for Jesus? Is this like Jesus now a popularity contest? We're going to rank who has the... So he was disparaging of it, and it set a lot of people's teeth on edge. And you can understand why, but he had credibility to do it because he had been there and done that, and not so many other people had.
Okay, so we talked about the clergy and people inside the music industry. How did the fans perceive him as an artist? Because I know you talked about in your book kind of what he expected from fans at shows and how he kind of wanted to be challenging them. But how did fans perceive him? How did they take him?
Well, Larry had this unique thing where he had so many people that were, offended by him, and yet they were drawn to him like iron filings to a magnet. They couldn't resist him. So they would complain about the fact that he argued with the sound man in concerts. People said that he acted arrogant. But a lot of that was a stage act that was designed to make people kind of sit on the edge of their seat and be quiet so that he could actually get content, intellectual content and spiritual content across to them. Because if you're relaxed and you're feeling happy and you're clapping along with the music and you're enjoying yourself, you're probably not going to be in a position to really take a deep look inside your own life and see what needs to change and to deal with your own problems. And so fans both loved it and hated, and it still continues today. People feel very conflicted about Larry's life. And I don't think that's going to change, and it's going to be amplified with the appearance of my book.
How would you describe, for someone that never got to see him live, how would you describe a typical Larry Norman show, if typical is even the right word?
It was riveting. He could capture the attention of an audience like nobody that I've ever seen. He was an amazing live performer, electrifying. And even though some of my favorite live recordings of his are ones where he's performing with the band. And I mean, he definitely played full on pedal to the metal rock and roll when he had a band, and it was really good. But I think most, they felt like his intimate and compelling performances when it was just him spotlight on the stage with a grand piano and a guitar, and that guitar turned up to the point of distortion, and that very, very distinct idiosyncratic voice that he had, wet with reverb, and it cast a spell upon people, and you felt like you were in some kind of psychotherapy session. You know, Larry got under people's skin. They enjoyed his music. He was obviously a great songwriter and lyricist. That's what made people keep coming back. And he had a catalog of songs that were really, really near and dear to people's hearts. And as I've talked to fans over the years, they talk about how his records and his music were an important part of their youth, their childhood, their coming of age. And anytime an artist really gets inside your head like that and starts rearranging the mental furniture, that's something special.
In all of your research and all that, what's something that surprised you about Larry Norman?
Well, there's a lot that surprised me. One of the things, how wide his circle of influence and spheres of connections were. You know, people talk about him as the father of Christian rock and, you know, bringing along people like Randy Stonehill and Mark Hurd and producing the Daniel Amos Band and kind of creating this, you know, CCM industry. But for me, what I found to be so compelling was that it seemed like it was the non-Christians that really understood Larry and appreciated him the most, and were the most interested in what he had to say. But I'm compelled by things like Black Francis. Black Francis got to be friends with Larry, and he would take Larry to clubs, and he saw Larry with people in the world who were living lives very far from God. But he said Larry was the most Christ-like person that he'd ever met, because these people felt comfortable with him. And I think that's very telling, is when the sinners are more willing to listen than the saints.
I know he's been gone for about 10 years. What do you think he would write about if he were alive today?
I think that Larry would be troubled by the fact that many of the same problems that he saw with the church, there's still institutional racism, not only in the broader culture, and in some of our authority structures, but also in the church. I think that he would be concerned that Christians are, you know, apt to use cliches like we're supposed to be in the world but not of the world. But the problem is that Christians seem to be of the world but not actually in it. They don't have a really credible voice in the arts, like he maybe would have wanted or hoped for. I think he would have Christian, you know, contemporary music or even a lot of modern ministries has just increasingized, and more about marketing and PR and money coming into the coffers than a real desire to alleviate the concerns of the poor. you didn't have traditional churches out at night talking to, you know, witnessing to prostitutes and drug dealers and streetwalkers and all that kind of stuff. And he did. He was the kind of guy late in his life that would take a homeless guy off the street and take him to the nicest restaurant in town and sit him down and feed him a meal until it made the restaurant owner feel uncomfortable. So, you know, I think that he would wonder whether or not we were really scandalized by the prophetic genius of Jesus of Nazareth.
Well, I know we had some technical difficulties, but thank you so much for being patient and sticking with us, and I really appreciate your time.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm very honored to speak with you. Thank you so much, Gabe.
That was our interview with Dr. Gregory Thornberry. in full disclosure, it did take a few takes to get that interview done. We had some technical difficulties, but he was a great sport about it, and I just really thank him for being patient with us and talking with us about that, because I mean, this is definitely a story that does need to be told. Again, I'm a history major, so I'm always a sucker for good bios, and this is one that's definitely, I'm very proud to have on my bookshelf, and it's one that you guys need to check out. Once again, it's called Why Should the Devil Have All the Good Music? It's a story of Larry Norman and the perils of Christian rock. It's a great story. It talks about so many different experiences and stories, including those with the Christian music industry, those with the televangelists at the time, such as Bob Larson, Jerry Falwell, Jimmy Swagger, kind of his experiences with them, as well as the late Billy Graham. And, you know, it talks about his relationship with his father. It talks about his relationship. It goes into great detail about his relationship with Randy Stonehill, which, for those of you that were Christian music fans at the time, that name will definitely ring a bell. And a lot of times, these stories, you know, Randy Stonehill, Daniel Amos, a lot of these stories do end up being tragic because of the business side of it. And this book is very revealing when it comes to that. But it's also a story, and this is kind of how I want to end this. It's also a story about grace. Larry Norman was a guy that wasn't perfect, and he would be the first one to tell you that. And he would be the first one to tell you that Larry Norman is a guy that is not defined by his mistakes, but he's defined more by grace and hope and Christ's love. And he would want that to be the same for you as you listen. And so as you read this bio, I hope you can catch that point, that even though we do make mistakes, we are saved by grace. And that's the beautiful thing about it. Thank you guys so much for joining us. This has been such a fun show for us. We absolutely love to talk about these great artists that have shaped the history of Christian music. You can check us out on Twitter at DC Talk Act 2. That's DC Talk Act and the number 2. You can check us out on Facebook, Decent Christian Talk, or the group discussion page, Decent Christian Talk Podcast. Like we said before, we have a website, decentchristiantalk.com. We post all our shows on there. If you would like to subscribe to us on there, all you have to do is visit that page and give us your email address. There's a place where you can do that. And every time we post a show, you will get an email notification just for you, and that is completely free as well. Again, you can also donate to us on there, as well as patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. We're also on Instagram, DC Talk Podcast. We're still on Snapchat, DCT Podcast. We don't really know how that works right now. We're still working on that. Hey guys, we are on iTunes, we're on YouTube, We are on SoundCloud still. We're on Google Play for those of you that are Android users. Hey guys, if you can, give us a nice review on iTunes, subscribe to us on there, or wherever you listen to your podcast. We greatly appreciate that. And maybe the most important thing, if you know a Larry Norman fan, share this with somebody. Share this with somebody that you think would appreciate that. That's our favorite thing that you guys do, is share these shows with your friends and your family. Not because we want to be famous or popular or anything, but we believe in sharing these stories. That's why we do this show, and that's you know, we're just a bunch of fans, like we say. But thank you guys so much for joining us. We will catch you next time. You guys have a great Easter. Just once again, remember the reason that we celebrate. The resurrection of our Lord is paramount to our faith, and it's the reason why we have grace, like we talked about, and that's so awesome. You guys have a great Easter. We'll catch you next time. Peace.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.